It's time to end Andrew Perloff's national nightmare and get Brandon Ayuk to the Commanders. What's up? It is EJ Stewart. This is the Maggie and Perloff Show. I'm the executive producer of the Maggie and Perloff Show, filling in for the great Maggie Gray and the great Andrew Perloff. I'll be with you for the next 4 hours here on Infinity Sports Network. A lot to get to on this show, including my five bold predictions for the college football season, why the fall off of the Pittsburgh Steelers is imminent, and why one NFL team, I have a bad feeling, is about to make a grave mistake that could damage the franchise for years. Also, can we kill preseason? A lot to get to, man. I'm so excited to be here. And, you know, obviously, elephant in the room, have not been in studio for almost 2 months now after I injured my knee. We'll get plenty of updates on what happened to my knee, how I'm doing, when I'll fully be back. But I will say it is good to be back, particularly here in the host chair, filling in for, again, Maggie and Perloff. The Commanders opened up a window to compete in a way that I think can be franchise transfer, that could be transformational for the franchise. And they can kind of move on from the tyranny that was the Daniel Snyder era by acquiring Brandon Ayuk. And it is not something they need to explore. It's not something I want them to try. It's not something I want them to attempt. They need to get this done. But how do we get Brandon Ayuk, who's currently with the 49ers, discontented with his contract situation, not practicing, not with the team? How do we get him from Washington, excuse me, from San Francisco, all the way, excuse me, all the way to Washington? How do we get there? Well, it's so funny. Sometimes you scroll on your timeline, you see a sports story that makes you say, huh? And that's pretty much what happened to me yesterday, because the show ends yesterday, and, you know, I'm getting ready. You know, I do physical therapy now twice a week, so I'm, you know, kind of getting myself prepared to go to physical therapy. And I look on my Apple Watch, get the notification. The Philadelphia Eagles of the NFC East acquire wide receiver Jahan Dotson from the Washington Commanders of the NFC East. Huh? That was my reaction, because let's be real, you do not see divisional trades happen very often in the NFL, and really not in many sports for obvious reasons. And I see the Commanders, typically a clown show of an organization, giving up on a first round pick and trading him to the rival Eagles, potentially handing Philly the missing piece to their already completely loaded offense. I'm saying, oh, I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I'm coming in, I'm crushing the Commanders, because clearly they still have no idea what they're doing. But then last night happened. And you had the great Michael Silver, longtime NFL reporter, longtime NFL columnist, who kind of crystallized to me why we saw that weird trade last night or yesterday that made me go, huh? Because Silver, who's based in the Bay Area, he's covered the 49ers for a very long time. He's as plugged in to the San Francisco 49er organization as much as any reporter we have covering the NFL. He went on radio yesterday and said that right now, in terms of the Brandon Ayuk situation, all things are on the table. Which is interesting, because what we've been hearing for the last 3 to 4 days, maybe really most of this week, is that essentially the trade scenario for Ayuk was kind of out of the window. There was not going to be some team that was going to come in and either match what the Niners wanted in compensation or match what Brandon Ayuk wanted from a contract situation. So now it became, well, things are going slow, but there is movement and there is talking with the 49ers and Ayuk's team. And you know, you kind of got the innuendo that something could get done with Brandon Ayuk. But Silver now says, again, all things are on the table, including all the trades we've been speculating. And, you know, he mentions the Steelers as being an obvious situation because we've talked about the Steelers pretty much since this whole thing began. The Patriots took themselves out, so I think he said that was probably still unlikely. But then he mentioned a team that I wasn't expecting. I don't think a lot of folks were expecting last night when he went on a local radio in the Bay Area. He said the Commanders trade scenario he's hearing is back on the table. And that could still be a possibility. And that's combined with what's always been the, I don't want to call it bizarre, but the kind of weird social media behavior by Brandon Ayuk. Yesterday, he liked another post of him in a Commander's uniform. These things don't even become headlines anymore because he's always doing something weird on social media. So, like, when I was getting ready to, you know, prepare for this show and figure out what's been going on beyond this Silver report, I saw that as like a report that was not being discussed very often. That the fact that he'd already liked him in a Commander's post, because he seems to like, you know, comments saying he should be traded, pictures of him in other jerseys. He does this every week. So it didn't make news, but I think the fact that he liked a picture on social media of him in a Commander's uniform on the same day that the Commanders make a trade getting rid of one of their top wide receivers, and on the same day that Michael Silver, plugged in reporter, says, well, there's a chance that the Commanders are very much still in play for Brandon Ayuk. One's an accident, two's a trend, three's evidence. That's three things that make me feel like, okay, we might have something cooking here. So like I said, the Commanders were said to be out of the Brandon Ayuk sweepstakes. For weeks, it's been clear that's where Ayuk has wanted to go. I say weeks, really more months to me. The guys felt like any time we've seen Brandon Ayuk not with the 49ers, I know he's been at camp, but he's not practicing. He's been with Jaden Daniels, the quarterback for the Washington Commanders. Of course, their number two overall pick. Those guys are inseparable, it seems like. I mean, they're really good friends, apparently. Of course, Ayuk played with Jaden Daniels when they both were at Arizona State. I talked about the social media activity. He always seemed to love the pictures of him in Commanders uniforms. To me, it's very clear that if he could, and I think part of the reason, honestly, now we're really kind of, you know, maybe I'm tinfoil hatting this, but I started thinking about why was he so adamant on not going to the Patriots? Why is the Steelers thing not really picked up steam the way we thought? Maybe he's still trying to hold out hope that he could find a way to go with his boy, Jaden Daniels in Washington. But look, if I'm Adam Peters, who worked under John Lynch, he's the general manager of the Commanders. This guy came from the 49ers, so he knows Brandon Ayuk well. He's part of a front office that drafted Brandon Ayuk in the first round. I'm asking San Fran, what do I have to do to get Ayuk here? And I'm getting it done. Because number one, regardless of whether Dotson was ever going to realize first round pick potential with the Commanders, he had a pretty decent rookie year that was plagued by injury. Last year, I don't know what happened. He didn't play well. He couldn't figure it out. He had drops. He did not have a good season last year. Still a young player, though. But regardless of whether or not that was going to figure itself out, he was still a body in a receiving room that is now extremely thin outside of Terry McLaurin. And now you have your rookie quarterback who's never played in the NFL going into the season with now a major upheaval in his receiver room and limited resources. They were talking about Martavis Bryant being a factor for the Washington Commanders receivers this year. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Martavis Bryant hasn't played since like 2017, 2016. It is not an ideal situation for a rookie quarterback to walk in and have his number two receiver, regardless of whether he could figure out Cliff Kingsbury's offense, regardless of whether he looked like he may not reach first-round pick potential, the guy was still a body and a guy who's played in the NFL, a guy with NFL first-team reps. You would think that guy could help Jaden Daniels. And they just said, adios, son. I mean, they essentially swapped third-round picks and then took a seventh just to get him out the building. which is why I was so ready to crush the Commanders. But then you hear the Michael Silver report, you say, okay, maybe something is happening here. So number one, you got to get out of UK because you just lost your number two receiver. Whether he was a good number two is not the conversation. They don't have a number two on the roster. I don't believe in Luke McCaffrey is coming in week one as a rookie and being able to be a number two receiver. And like I said, we're talking about Martavis Bryant, seriously, with the Commanders. So you need to get IU because you need a body to help the situation just to make sure Jaden Daniels isn't walking into a dumpster fire. Number two, Ayuk is a perfect fit for the Commanders. And I actually think he gives them a chance to be a player in the NFC East, maybe in the entire NFC. Because Brandon Ayuk became a first-round pick catching passes from Jaden Daniels at Arizona State. Those two are tight. They have familiarity. And I think Ayuk can help Daniels' acclimation to the NFL by them being together. But it is also a great scheme fit. Forget about the vibes fit. The vibes fit is immaculate. We know why it makes sense for those guys to be together. But I think as a scheme fit, this also would be a perfect fit for the Commanders. Because there's been a lot of conversation, some on this show, about Brandon Ayuk perhaps being a system player. A guy that Kyle Shanahan molded into a guy who isn't actually good, but is good playing in Kyle Shanahan's system. That has been a lot of the narrative as to why they drafted Ricky Pearsall to potentially replace Brandon Ayuk in San Francisco. And it is also why perhaps John Lynch in the front office is not so keen on making Brandon Ayuk one of the highest paid receivers in the NFL. The idea that he's actually not that great, he's replaceable, and that if they lose him, they're not losing that much. We could have that conversation on the show. You can call in 855-212-4227 at any point to talk about this. But I don't think Brandon Ayuk is a system guy for Kyle Shanahan. Because we forget. I talked about that connection that Daniels and Ayuk had playing at Arizona State. They were not running a Kyle Shanahan offense when Brandon Ayuk was catching 1,100 yards in college. They were not running Kyle Shanahan stuff when Brandon Ayuk was lighting up the Pac-12 and earned himself a first-round pick selection kind of out of nowhere. They were running the air raid system. Spread offense. Popularized by the late, great Mike Leach. You know who's the offensive coordinator for the Washington Commanders? Mike Leach's essential protege, the guy who played for Mike Leach, a guy that is essentially one of the current godfathers of the air raid system as it is run today, Cliff Kingsbury. So now you got the familiarity just in terms of guys are friends, guys know each other, and guys played together in terms of Ayuk and Daniels. But now I think you have Brandon Ayuk going to a system that might fit him better. He may be a better player in Washington than he was in San Francisco. Because remember, it took Brandon Ayuk years to figure out the Kyle Shanahan offense. He came in as one type of receiver. And the first year or two, like, he looked like a bust. It didn't look like it was going to work out. And credit to him, like, he learned the system. He learned how to play within his role, and he became a star. But it took years for him to become the player he was last year. And people still don't believe he's still that good. But what if Brandon Ayuk gets to go back and play into the system that he actually was comfortable with in college, the system that got him to the NFL, essentially? Why couldn't he become a better player playing with a quarterback he's familiar with, playing across one of the other better receivers in the NFL and Terry McLaurin? And let's talk about that pairing, by the way. Ayuk, McLaurin, together, that's probably what? Top five receiving duo in the NFL? I'll give you Miami. I'll give you Philly. I'll give you Cincy. After that, Houston, I want to see what Stephon Diggs is in Houston before I say they're definitely top five. Chicago, I want to see what, you know, Caleb Williams and how Keenan Allen, how that pairing goes. Is Rome Odunze number two? Like, we don't really know who the second guy is besides DJ Moore. I don't know. I think it's tricky to find five better receiving duo potentially to Brandon Ayuk and Terry McLaurin. And plus, we know Dan Quinn. He knows how to coach defense. He's familiar with these division foes. I think the Commanders could be dangerous in the NFC. If the Commanders complete this trade for Brandon, I think they become the new Detroit Lions. I'm not saying that the Detroit Lions from this year. I'm not saying that the Detroit Lions from last year. But remember the Lions 2 years ago when you started to see things bubble up, a terrible, bumbling franchise that hasn't been able to get out of their way for decades. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, they got something cooking here. Oh, look at that offensive line. Oh, look at Goff improving. Oh, look at how they're able to run the football and be physical. Look at Dan Snyder. He's got these guys playing like madmen. Look at Aiden Hutchinson. You started to see the beginnings of something. And it culminated with them having a winning season and knocking Aaron Rodgers and the Packers out of the playoffs and sending Aaron Rodgers packing from Green Bay. I think that may be what you're seeing with the Commanders and how things are moving, especially if they find a way to make this what I would be, I think, a mega deal to get Ayuk to Washington. Do you think the Commanders should go all in on Brandon Ayuk? I say absolutely. And there's risk involved with big business, man. Like, scared money don't make money. I know risking a first-round pick when you're one of the, you're coming as maybe one of the worst teams in the NFL is a risk. Whether it's a this year pick, whether it's a next year pick, it all comes with risk. Giving Ayuk a lot of money, considering we're talking about a guy who, in terms of elite numbers, 1 year of elite numbers production. He's been good for 2 years, but elite, you probably say 1 year. Yes, good business comes with risk. I think this is good business for the Commanders. I would go all in on Brandon Ayuk. 855-212-4227. Would you go all in on Brandon Ayuk if you were the Washington Commanders? I say this every time I step behind the mic. And I don't say this, or it hasn't changed because I have a bum knee now. I sit here in this long leg brace, having not been in these studios for almost 2 months. The rules haven't changed. There's two commandments to any radio show that EJ Stewart hosts. Number one, EJ will always keep it 100. Number two, EJ is ducking no smoke. So if you want to call and you think I'm crazy for suggesting the Commanders should consider trading a first-round pick and backing up the Brinks truck for Brandon Ayuk, I want to hear from you. 855-212-4227. You agree with your boy. I want to hear from you. 855-212-4227. You can also tweet me. EJ_Stewart as well. I like to read tweets on the air as long as you're not sending me weird stuff on X. Like, Elon Musk has ruined X. So I always use the caveat of, as long as you don't like curse me out, as long as you're not sending me something weird, then you're all good and I'll read your tweets on the air. But now I'm a little concerned considering how somehow Twitter has gotten worse. Since the last time I've hosted a show, somehow there's more OnlyFans accounts on there. There's more weirdo accounts on there. Like, so I don't know what is going to be sent to me over the next 4 hours. But as long as it is about sports, as long as it isn't about this show, I'll read your tweets on the air. So hit your boy up on Twitter. Give me a follow while you're at it. EJ_Stewart on Twitter/X. Coming up, we've discussed the Commander side of this potential situation. Is time running out on the 49ers reign in the NFC? I'll tell you why that answer is yes after this. It is EJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff. We will be right back. Mic check. 1-2-1-2. What's up? It's EJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff on the Infinity Sports Network. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. It's so funny when you're about to do a show the day before and you think your show is going to go one way, but then something happens later in the evening that makes you go a totally different way. I was so ready to come in and be like, what are the Commanders doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, I know Jahan Dotson has been a disappointment. I will share personally, I root very hardly for the Jahan Dotson. You're probably like, why the hell is EJ rooting for some random wide receiver for the Commanders who, you know, played at Penn State. Jahan Dotson actually grew up in the housing, like, development, so to speak, that my family lives in Lehigh Valley. He went on the same school bus as my younger brothers who were in high school. Like, you know, Jahan Dotson's a legend from Lehigh Valley. So I always rooted hard for Jahan Dotson, but that's not really why I was so down on the Commanders yesterday when I saw this news. It was just the concept of, like, man, you draft this guy in the first round. Some people thought it was a little bit high for Jahan Dotson anyway, but you draft him in the first round. After 2 years, the guy you think is maybe more healthy, he had injuries his first 2 years, a lot last year for sure. You think maybe he's healthy, let's see what happens, new offensive coordinator, and then you dump him and you send him to the Eagles. By the way, Lehigh Valley is Eagles country, so now he's kind of going home. The Eagles desperately were looking for a number three receiver. They felt like it was the last Infinity Stone they were missing in an offense that they think could be perhaps the best in the NFL with Kellen Moore now calling plays. So you're like, man, like, I know he sucked for you, but, like, you send him to the Eagles, you send him in the division, and you don't get anything for him? You essentially get a seventh-round pick, essentially, and you maybe swap some thirds, and that's all you get for a guy you drafted in the first round? You didn't even give him a chance with Jaden Daniels? Like, I was ready to crush him. But then all that changes on a dime when you hear the report from Michael Silva that the Commanders are absolutely not out of the Brandon Ayuk sweepstakes and that they're one of the teams that may make a trade. And on the Niners side of this, because I you know what was interesting to me again, not just the Commanders side was interesting to me, that they may be a team that could find a way to get Ayuk in the building. It was the fact that all options were on the table, that we had been working under, I think, a presumed assumption that there was not going to be a Brandon Ayuk trade, that they'd come to some agreement. Or maybe they just don't come to some agreement and maybe he just shows up week one. I have a sneaky suspicion that, like, all these guys that, like, aren't in camp, like CD and Chase. Chase is there but not for, you know, participating. People don't understand how much guys hate training camp. It is apparently, like, the worst thing you experience as an NFL player. It's why every year, like, guys just randomly retire, like, in training camp. Like, you'll have a 25-year-old safety who you think is in, like, you know, entering maybe the prime of his career. Like, he's young and, you know, but, and then they'll just retire. You'll be like, wow, why the guy retire? Because training camp sucks. It's hot. It's hard. You got coaches screaming at you. You got your teammates screaming at you. There's fights every day. Media in your face. It seems like the media is now, it seems like they're there the entire practice. I mean, we get, like detailed descriptions of what happens every single play essentially in practice. So it is not fun. So I have a sneaky suspicion that a lot of these guys are like, look, I have a plausible reason to hold out. I kind of would like some money. It's probably unlikely, especially in Jamar Chase's situation. But, like, training camp sucks. When's the next time I can just skip training camp and it'd be fine? Probably never. Maybe one more time in my career when I get another bite at the apple. I'm not going. I think C.D. Lamb doesn't want anything to do with this. I damn sure know Trent Williams don't want nothing to do with this. See, that guy's like 38 years old. He's like, I'm not hitting pads in 100-degree heat with coaches screaming at me when I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm not doing that. So I have a sneaky suspicion that a lot of this has a lot to do with just Ayuk being like, I'm not going to training camp. Like, am I getting paid? Training camp sucks. Maybe I'll get paid. Maybe I won't. I'll show up week one. But I'm damn sure not going to training camp. This is the only time I get a chance to miss this. But when I think about the 49ers situation, something just screams, the end is near. And I think a lot of that to me has to do with the fact that things just don't last forever. Like, I feel like one of the things I always think about is not just in sports, but just in life, is that when you're in the middle of something that has been kind of like a staple, you get this feeling that it's just going to last forever. If you're a rap fan or a hip-hop fan, you thought the Rockefeller Dynasty was going to last forever. Because why wouldn't it? They're on top of the game. It's the best thing in the world. Why wouldn't it then? You'd think Madonna was going to be just the greatest forever. She was as big a star as there ever was. She was popular. She was making great music. She was acting. You just thought these people would just have a reign forever. And it just never quite works out that way. There's always going to be the peak and then the fall off. I feel like we're watching the fall off of the Niners. And I don't really care about Brock Purdy throwing interceptions in practice. I just have no idea what to make of that. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I do. But I do look at what feels like to me the end of the kumbaya era of the 49ers. And that's what I've called it for the last couple of months. It just feels like the last two, 3 years, man, this team was locked in. Besides, you know, Debo Samuel, he was causing some trouble. And besides him, things were just almost too easy for the Niners. Like, they kind of easily acquired Christian McCaffrey. Very few contract disputes outside of Debo Samuel. And I don't count the Nick Bosa thing because it was not contentious. He was there every day in practice. He was engaged. And they signed him fairly quickly. That was not really an issue. And they had no problem paying him. You lose Trey Lance. He gets hurt. You throw in Jimmy Garoppolo. He gets hurt. And then you find a way that your Mr. Irrelevant becomes an NFL star quarterback. And that just works out. Everything's just been working out. Kyle Shanahan, he's had, you know, a great run as being one of the best offensive minds in the NFL. Everything has worked out except the ring. It's the one thing that has not fallen in their favor. And I think a lot of these guys who have been very committed, very all in, very bought in to what the Niners have been building, now I see a lot of guys asking for their handout. I see Brandon Ayuk with his handout. I saw Christian McCaffrey with his handout. That was crazy to me, Christian McCaffrey. Because that guy was already the highest paid running back in the NFL. And I'm like 75% convinced he just wanted that money to pay off his wedding to Olivia Cooper. I'm like convinced. Because he like no one had any idea that that guy had any issues with his contract. He randomly doesn't show up to OTAs. They pay him like 2-3 weeks before his wedding. And then we see all these pictures of this lavish wedding. I'm just saying. Trent Williams, again, he don't want to go to training camp. Nobody knows what his situation is. And then the lack of communication, too. We heard that the Niners before the last few weeks, they hadn't talked to Ayuk since May. Kyle Shanahan had no idea why Christian McCaffrey was holding out. He had no idea why Trent Williams was holding out. They don't even know what's going on. And typically, you see this after you won championships. You win championships, you have the parades. Now everybody says, okay, it's time to get my bag. It's time to get mine. Because you've bought in to the team, and now it's time to cash in. And I really don't have much of a problem with that. But that becomes a problem when you haven't actually got the ring. And you have all these guys asking for the handout, combined with how hard it is to continue to get back to that top, to continue to get to the Super Bowl and lose. And not just lose, but lose in like kind of heartbreaking fashion, where like it kind of was your fault. Like you blew leads, you didn't know the rules. Like these were not just like typical Super Bowl losses. Super Bowl losses in themselves are devastating. The Niners have had particularly devastating luck when it comes to the Super Bowl. You go to the NFC Championship game, your quarterback blows out his elbow in the first quarter. Like they all of that stuff would be hard enough to continue to keep this reign going for the 49ers. I think you combine that with now, I think guys saying, hey, I'm kind of entering the prime, or maybe I'm kind of leaving the prime of my career. Maybe it's time for me to pay up. Maybe it's time for me to skip training camp. Maybe it's time for me to skip OTAs because I don't need to do all this. When I see, it's kind of, to me, the Niners, it's a little different, but I'm going to make the analogy because I love the movie. And no, it's not Rush Hour because I'm wearing a Rush Hour t-shirt today. I love Rocky III. Rocky III is my favorite Rocky. It feels like, in some ways, the Niners are Rocky in the beginning of Rocky III, where things have been good. It seems like, regardless of how bad they play in the playoffs, they're still able to beat the NFC. Like, they played terrible against the Packers, still won. Played terrible against the Lions, still won. Like, it just seemed like everything was kind of coming easy to them in the NFC, at least. And I think what we've seen this offseason is, like, Rocky, the beginning of Rocky III. They're kind of just, like, going through the motions. They're kind of like, oh, you know, it's all good. Like, and I think that the Lions, I think that the Packers, I think that the Eagles, I think they're Clubber Lang in the gym. I think that they're doing push-ups with rats, you know, in the gym. I think they got, you know, pipes leaking, and they're, you know, doing crunches, you know, screaming, getting ready. Like, those teams are hungry. I don't know if the Niners have that same hunger. I think a lot of guys looking to get paid. I think a lot of guys have bought into that system, and I think that kumbaya era of the Niners is over. 855-212-4227. 4227 is the number to call. My good friend Peter Schwartz is here with updates. Peter, what's happening?
It is great to see you. I know you I told you that off the air, but wonderful to see you. And by the way, I would like to see the Jets contribute to that end of the Kumbaya moment for the 49ers on opening night.
I'd love to see it too.
I'd like to see that very much. Let us start with baseball, and our first stop is San Diego.
Gillespie rocks and fires, and a bouncing ball to the right side. Bogarts can't get to it. That's through as well. Lindor scores to make it 6-1. RBI single for Alonso. Bogarts went to his left and could never get there. And Alonso adds another run.
Keith Redd on Mets Radio. A lot of Met fans concerned about this road trip, but they started out in fine fashion. They beat the Padres 8-3. The Braves beat the Phillies 3-2, so the Braves lead the Mets by a game and a half for that third National League wildcard spot.
Should be a really good race, I think, down the stretch. A lot of Mets fans, you're right, were concerned, but the Braves fans were concerned about the series with the Phillies.
Yeah.
And both teams seem to be showing some moxie, which is going to make it fun in September, hopefully.
I think the Mets have found a little magic back again, too. I was with my son at the game the other day, and they had that walk-off with Jesse Winker, so maybe that reinvigorated the team going on to this road trip. We'll see what happens. Let's move on now to Baltimore as the Orioles took on the Astros.
2-2. And that is lined in the center field. A base hit for Shea Whitcomb. That'll score two as Gamels and Myers come home. A two-run single for Shea Whitcomb. And the Astros' lead is now 6-0. Whitcomb with his first big league RBIs.
That was Robert Ford on Astros radio. And the Astros beat up on the Orioles 6-0 in Camden Yards. They open up a 5.5 game lead over the Mariners in the AL West. We'll have more on the Mariners in just a moment. The Orioles are now a game and a half behind the first place Yankees in the American League East. The Yankees beat the Guardians 6-0. Another day, another home run for Aaron Judge, his 48th of the season. And he is now, EJ, back on track, back on pace for 60 home runs.
It's incredible what he's doing. And in some ways, it almost still feels like it's under the radar in a weird way. I don't know if it's maybe because the Yankees have kind of played 500 baseball, it seems like, for 3 months now. Like they've held on to that early start. They haven't necessarily fallen off a cliff, but they haven't necessarily played great baseball. But Judge, he's continuing to dominate, which has been remarkable. I have a question. If he gets the record again, do we do the whole... We're getting the ball. We're asking who's signing it. Are we breaking into college football games to show is that bad? Are we doing all that again for an AL record? It's not Bonds' record. It's the AL record.
Right. It's still a record. I mean, yeah. I think there'll still be a lot of people following it. And a lot has to do with the fact that just like the first time around, he was chasing another Yankee.
Yeah.
So I think now he's just basically chasing himself.
I know, which is incredible. There's part of me that wonders if it would be better for the Yankees if he does not come close to this. Like, I think the Yankees, because I look at this and I'm like, the Yankees, everything is all about the postseason. Because Judge went on that incredible home run, and then all those feelings were lost once the playoffs happened.
Like, it's like he has to do it in the playoffs,
right? So, like, I'm like, if and I don't know if that was the reason why, you know, he wasn't able to carry that into the postseason last year, just all the pressure and everything that he went through, but. It's like maybe if he just puts that aside, maybe they'll have more success. I don't know. It was 2 years ago. It was a magical run that he went on. I just wonder if maybe it would be better for the Yankees if he actually doesn't come close to this.
No way.
You want it, Ryan. You want to see
Yes. Who doesn't want to see this?
No, you're a Yankee fan, though,
no,
right?
No, I'm a Mets fan.
Oh, that's different.
What do you mean?
No, because I'm talking about what's best for the future of the Yankees, not me.
Him not setting a record isn't good for business?
No, not business.
No, I think your point is that he did it the last time, and then what did it mean for the Yankees? It meant nothing when the playoffs started.
It meant nothing.
I still want him to do it, though.
Right, and then you're a Yankee fan, so yeah. I understand the chase in the history. We all love history. We all love the fun. But especially with this organization— It is about titles.
Yeah.
It is about playoff success. And the last time we did this song and dance, we all got wrapped into it. And then once he was striking out in the playoffs, we were like, they're booing him. I don't know. I feel like there was a chance that all that pressure that led up to him getting that record, I wonder if he kind of ran out of gas by the time the playoffs happened or the pressure got to him a little bit. Maybe if he doesn't have that pressure, he just comes in with a normal 56 home runs.
Normal 56 home runs for him.
Normal 56 home runs. He just comes in And then, like, maybe he figures it out at the end. I really do wonder if this is best for him.
I'd love to see him show up for a game wearing a Roman Reigns t-shirt that says Levels Above. That's what I want to see him do. I want to see him show up with that t-shirt on. Let's move on to Washington.
And the pitch, swing, and a long drive to left center field. This one way back. Got a chance. Going. Gone. Goodbye. Into the brewhouse, red seats, up into the right of the Rockies bullpen in left center field. Bang! Zoom goes Juan Yepes with his fourth home run in the big leagues this year.
I see Ryan learned very well from Pete Pilotti. Pete did a wonderful job training you. Unbelievable. Like, Levels Above.
I mean, you know, there have been folks that have said he's mini Pete.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's supposed to be a good thing sometimes. I think when it comes from Bogish, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
I think he means malice when he says it. I think he should stop. I think when other other folks say it, I think it's a compliment, Ryan.
Uh-huh. But yeah, great time.
So I love that we're getting John Sterling getting hit by a baseball or a home run. So I hope that stays after Pete's gone.
That was Charlie Slows, by the way, on Nationals radio. The Nationals beat the Rockies 8-3. Back to the Mariners. They fired manager Scott Servais, named Dan Wilson as their new manager. The Mariners had a 10-game lead in the AL West back on June 18th, but now they've gone 20-23 since then. Wilson takes over after serving as a coordinator in the Mariners minor league system. Now to NFL preseason, the Bears beat the Chiefs 34-23. Bears defensive back Douglas Coleman III hospitalized after making a tackle during the third quarter. Bears head coach Matt Eberflus with an update after the game.
When I was on the field, standing over there on the Chiefs sideline, he was moving his limbs. He gave us a thumbs up. So that was really lifting to our football team. But I don't have anything more than that. He's at the hospital right now being evaluated. So that's all I have for him.
And Coleman came over to the Bears after playing two seasons with Ottawa in the CFL. Obviously, prayers up for him that he'll be okay.
Absolutely. It's always one of those sobering things that you never want to see happen on a field, especially, you know, with how physical and violent the game is. Hopefully he gets better soon.
Also yesterday, the Colts beat the Bengals 27-14. You've been talking about this. The Commanders trade wide receiver Jahan Dotson and a 2025 fifth-round pick to the Eagles for a third-round pick and two seventh-round picks. Let's move on to college football, EJ. Michigan State quarterback Aiden Childs has some gambling advice for everybody as the Spartans get ready for their season opener against Florida Atlantic on August 30th. He said, if you bet, take the over. The Spartans currently an 11.5-point favorite, and the over-under is set at 46 points, according to DraftKings Sportsbook. And I guess you can take that information from him in a couple of different ways.
Yes, and if I'm the defensive player on the Spartans, I'd say, hey, buddy, what do you mean by they're taking over? You're saying we can't get any stops? We're not going to be able to get it's going to be a high-scoring game. We're not going to be able to play defense. Like, what's going on?
Or does he feel like they'll easily get the 46 points
maybe
by themselves?
They'll do it by themselves, maybe. This made me feel uncomfortable. Like identifying exactly what is wrong with him saying that. Because essentially he's trying to say this is going to be a blowout. We're going to score a lot of points. It's going to be great. On the surface, it's like, okay, not so bad. He's not saying, hey, take the under. Or you know, hey, like, fade us here. Like, you know, he's not saying that. But, like, the fact that he's even going down the road. And I know, look, he's 18 years old. Like, I can't believe how young he is as a sophomore. If I'm the head coach, I'm pulling him aside and say, hey, gambling references. Let's just leave that to the experts.
Yeah, he's being investigated.
He's being investigated
now? He should.
I don't. Well, so what happened? I don't know if you guys saw. Like, the NFL, they grabbed Jaden Daniels and they grabbed Malik Nabers and said, "Hey, sit down. You're gonna have a seminar on what exactly the rules are with gambling." Because remember, they had that side bet of who's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think it was $10,000 on the line. And both the NFL, they came out with a statement that they said, we talked to the players, we talked to the players' reps, and we talked to the union. And those two players had to do a seminar this training camp, I think, to relearn the rules about gambling. Mm-hmm. So
they put out a press release about this the other day, highlighting the just so everybody knows what the rules are about gambling.
Yeah, so the NFL certainly does not mess around. And that also seems similar to Childs, where it's like they're not saying, oh, pick Caleb Williams. Like, they're suggesting that they're going to have a great season. They're essentially going to play well, just like Childs is. But again, just even going down that road is probably scary because you don't know what that could lead to. Could that then lead to you, you know, going on a DraftKings account and putting money? Like, you stay away from it. All athletes, just stay away from the gambling stuff, please.
Let me close with this. Who is the best team in New York right now? Best sports franchise in New York right now?
Liberty.
Absolutely. WNBA Liberty over the Wings last night, 79-71. That's 8 straight wins, and they lead the WNBA with a record of 25-4. Breanna Stewart had 19 points.
Thank you so much.
There you go.
Peter Schwartz. We'll be back with another hour with some more updates. Coming up on the show, for one team, the win-loss record doesn't matter. I'll tell you why the good, the bad, and the ugly of Anthony Richardson was on full effect last night, but why Colts fans shouldn't panic. It's EJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff. We'll be right back. It was the good, the bad, and the ugly for Anthony Richardson in preseason last night. What's up? It's EJ Stewart on the Infinity Sports Network filling in for the great Maggie Gray and Andrew Perloff. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. If you saw the first drive from Anthony Richardson playing against the Bengals second team in preseason last night, you probably were really excited. Now, we had the story yesterday about how in the joint practices, it sounded like the Bengals defensive players were getting after Richardson a little bit. They were talking trash, telling him he can't throw, telling him he doesn't want to throw, telling him he just wants to run. And it was kind of hard to determine what to make of that. It's a practice. You don't know what the teams are using, what they're hiding stuff. And, you know, I think there was some trepidation about really what to make of it, but it was entertaining. It's kind of like that one of my favorite memes. Forgive me, I don't know what movie it is. I'm sure someone's going to call in and yell at me. But that Denzel Washington meme where he's like, you see this? He's talking about a newspaper. It's 95% BS, but it's entertaining. So I read it. That's how I felt about the Anthony Richardson versus Bengals in joint practice story. I don't know. I have no idea what to make of it. It's probably 95% BS, but it's entertaining. So we talked about it. And that kind of carried into the game. Because the first drive, Richardson's getting the ball out quick. He's checking plays at the line, able to pick up blitzes, get the ball out, you know, to his receivers. He was accurate. And you're thinking, oh, this is the good. Then the bad and ugly came very quickly. Because the second drive, pick six. Third drive, missing easy throws left and right. Later was a strip sack, fumble. Didn't lose the ball. The Colts recovered. But all in all, a very uneven performance for Anthony Richardson. But if you're a Colts fan, the win-loss record doesn't matter this season. And I know that hurts. I know that's tough to hear because they actually have a lot of talent. I mean, Jonathan Taylor is still one of the better running backs if he's healthy. I love that they re-signed Michael Pittman. I think he's a star. The defense is underrated, sneakily really good. But they lost their development year last year with Anthony Richardson. Like, them winning 9 games was not supposed to happen. Them competing for a division title, not supposed to happen. And I don't think it does happen if Anthony Richardson plays 17 games. Because those same mistakes you saw last night, he's probably doing in regular season games last year. In fact, he was. We saw a game where he looked phenomenal. He was doing crazy athletic feats that we'd never seen. And then we saw some games where he was struggling with his accuracy. But you can't take what you're going to see this year and say, okay, it's time to move on or panic. This is not about wins and losses for the Colts this year. It's about continuing to develop Anthony Richardson, who we know is a physical specimen, who we know is a great athlete. Now you're trying to turn him into a great quarterback. That's going to take some time. Nobody loves seeing your former first-round pick throwing pick sixes to second-team players in the Bengals. But patience, Colts fans, patience. Coming up, are the Steelers screwed?